I'm Brian Karam, and I've spent decades covering politics. Now I'm taking you behind the scenes, one interview at a time.
Join us as each week Brian confronts the issues that matter, posing the questions you wish you could ask. No filter, no agenda, just the truth.
We're not here for sound bites. We're here for substance. Join me, Brian Karam, every week as we cut through the noise and get straight to it. This is Just Ask the Question, where curiosity will lead us to the facts.
Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, when you want answers, all you have to do is just ask the question.
History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is reporter Sarah Burris. I just love her. I keep asking her back, and we have so much to talk about. So before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent and woman-run. I offer a show every Tuesday just for patrons called What's Up, where I get a little more personal and talk about whatever's on my mind. I also offer an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Look at the different tiers and support the show today. Now please enjoy my conversation with Sarah Burris. Welcome back to the show, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You're so popular.
I don't know about that.
You're the popular, the reporter. I know you were just on Bob Seska's show.
Yes, which was super fun. He is such a sweetheart. It was great to chat with him.
Yeah, and obviously I just want to be clear to my listeners. I have been rotating a few guests recently. Every once in a while I branch out and pull someone in. But it's been kind of a rotation, and obviously Sarah is one of these people on rotation, and I am going to be, you know, reaching out and getting some different guests as we move forward, but I also just kind of enjoy the camaraderie that I have with the two Sarahs, as I call them, Sarah Wood and Sarah Burris, and then, of course, Sherry Jacobus is always fun, and Stephanie Walton is always fun, so I'm going to be branching out a little bit because I've been sticking to my favorites. It's like, aww, my favorites make me feel safe and cozy. So, but I will be branching out. We're going to get a little bit more diversity here too. So just FYI, everybody. But Sarah, Sarah's been busy. She's been writing a lot. And so I just grabbed a couple of her articles. We're going to go over some of those. And then I'm going to ask her, you know, is there anything else? Because I'm sure there is. But I just want to start off with the one. I think there was all these articles are from today, too, which is one is let's just talk about this. And I want you to go off. Trump is getting bad advice as aides throw a wrench into his plans. You heard this from a GOP senator. So please, if I screwed that up, just correct me and tell us about it.
No, you're spot on. So I don't know if folks remember, I think I was on maybe the same day as the Todd Blanche hearing last time. I can't remember.
Maybe, but I don't remember.
But I'm pretty sure we talked about it. And one of the things that that I was really shocked by is when it came time for Tom Tillis to give his spiel, he was just sort of glowing about Blanche. And I was like, well, yeah, we lost that vote. Well, it turns out not so much. It turns out Tillis and John Cornyn, which we've sort of all named the YOLO caucus, mm-hmm, they've both said they're a no on Blanche until they can get a commitment from the administration that they're going to kill the little IRS settlement between Donald Trump and the U.S. government that creates the slush fund that everybody's like, that's shady. And that was kind of a shock. I think everybody knew a little bit yesterday. They were like that Cornyn was like, I don't know about this. I don't know if I can do this. And they were supposed to meet yesterday, Blanche and Cornyn, and the meeting was canceled at the last minute because they didn't have anything new to give him. And what is interesting, what kind of stuck out to me about this is that both senators were like, this isn't Blanche. Like, we've talked to Blanche. Blanche is happy to work with us. He seems completely cool with, you know, giving us what we need. But someone else higher up than Blanche is calling the shots. And what was funny with Tillis is he started walking away and then sort of shouted over his shoulder, it's not Trump. And then I shit you not, it was like an hour or two later, Trump posts on Truth Social and is like, yeah, it was me.
Wow.
And his comment was basically like, I don't really care if you support Todd Blanche or not. Once you guys are gone, I'll just renominate him and get him passed that way. And I was like, bro, you better be careful, because if you lose a bunch of seats, you're kind of screwed on that. And what Cornyn said after Trump posted that thing, Cornyn posted on X and was like, if you think it's just me and Tillis, you are sadly mistaken, my friend. So, wow. Which I'm paraphrasing that, obviously. Yeah. I tried to make them all sound way more interesting and chill than they actually are. But yeah, so I that was a shocker. They haven't canceled the vote yet. Chuck Grassley still has a vote scheduled for today. And it's like, are you really going to do this? Because this is going to look bad. This is going to make people look bad.
Wow. Wow. That's kind of exciting. I think that's great. It's good to hear that. You know, I mean, we're constantly hearing such negative things, and it's good to hear stuff like this, because I think people tend to forget that, you know, in the fire hose of news, especially the fire hose of negative news, there is a lot of good stuff happening, or at least interesting stuff. So I'm definitely, that's fascinating. Okay. And I also told Sarah, like, she has to be the authority here, because I can only take so much, you know, I can only take so much of this news and not go completely insane. And thank God for people like Sarah who are out there writing about it and really in the know. So she's the authority here, and I want to be clear, but I want to bring this, excuse me, to another article that you wrote. Nothing can tear Trump's MAGA fans from him, even domestic violence. So let's talk about that. I mean, I'm not surprised. I don't think anyone's surprised, but, you know, what did you find?
So there's a new poll out that Politico did where they got deep in the weeds with MAGA supporters and asked them basically, what would it take, you know, for you to abandon. I think they even did it with like a nebulous GOP candidate, but I mean, the assumption was Donald Trump, right? And what would it take? And you remember way back in 2015 or 2016, Trump was like, yeah, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and my supporters wouldn't care. This basically confirms that. They asked, you know, how many would abandon the candidate if this happened, and the lowest number, which was 56%, said that they would still support him, even in the case of if he had like a not a DUI, but if he lied to him about like some sort of corruption thing. Which kind of tracks with the rest of the country.
I mean, that's all he's been doing.
right? The other ones, which were kind of startling, were like if he appeared in blackface, if he was accused of sexual assault, if he was accused of domestic violence, if he concealed a terminal illness.
all the things he's doing.
I know. If he was convicted of a DUI, which is hilarious. If he accepted gifts from lobbyists. I mean, like, all of these things, people were just like, yeah, no, I wouldn't abandon him. But the absolute worst for him is 57% of people said that if Trump shared classified information with a foreign government, they would still support him, which mm-hmm. means you've got, you know, the highest chunk of people who were like, yeah, if you give stuff to Saudi Arabia, we got issues. Which is, I think, more of a reason to reignite the investigation to the classified document scandal.
Yeah. Right. Wow. I mean, I can't say that I'm surprised. I mean, they're happy to vote for a convicted rapist. And, you know, I know educated all the fucking words, but he's a rapist. So, and the judge said he was a rapist. So a jury decided he was a rapist. And they still voted for him. A jury decided he broke the law 34 times, 34 count felonies. They don't care. So I think that's obvious. You know, I mean, we've heard all the stories that he raped Ivana because of her, something about, you know, she sent him to her doctor so he could get hair plugs or whatever the thing was, and they hurt. And so he beat her up and he raped her. And then she had to renege that because she wanted to get whatever money she could get from him. And I guess Don Jr. didn't talk to him for a long. They don't care. None of these people care. And yeah. I remember years and years ago, there was I don't know if it was Psychology Today, but there was some kind of article out about how the brains of conservatives are different. And it just, mm-hmm. it's true. We have different, I don't know what it is, because there's like this whole psychological thing. But their brains are filtering things differently than a liberal brain. So it all, you know, it all tracks, because they keep voting for these people. They don't care. It's like, we're gonna vote for a rapist criminal just to own the libs. But they're owning themselves. And that's like, I'm not saying anything new. It's like, well, how is that even possible?
I would say too, what was not kind of illustrated in this poll, but I've seen in other polling that includes MAGA folks and contrasts them with regular non-MAGA Republicans, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. is he's still losing support there. Like the non-MAGA Republicans, he's hemorrhaging support. And I would say even among MAGA Republicans, he's lost about 18% of those people.
Wow.
The MAGA Republicans are maybe like 30% or less. Mm-hmm. of the population. And so that's why you usually have like a good solid 30% that Trump is always going to have an approval with. It's rare for him to drop below 35, and he dropped below 35 this week in a bunch of different polls. So he's starting to lose ground with Republicans, with non-MAGA Republicans, and a little bit with MAGA Republicans. There was a show, I saw one of the UFC fighters on this like 4-hour podcast with this other kind of ex-Trump supporter. And they were both talking about like how much people feel like they were lied to, how many mm-hmm. Trump supporters feel like they were lied to. And I think that is kind of been the successful message that people have used to try and reach MAGA folks and mm-hmm. and pull them out of it. And there are a bunch of academics who've talked about the cultism aspect mm-hmm. of Trumpism. And that was one of the things the UFC guy was talking about. He's like, have you ever been to a Trump rally? That is, you know, the absolute moment when you realize these people don't think for themselves.
Right.
And I was really shocked to hear, you know, an ex-Trump supporter say that, mm-hmm. Much less say it publicly. Right. So, it's been interesting to see the decline, but I think this is what happens whenever you basically do the opposite of everything that you tell your voters you're going to do. Yeah, like people
eventually they figure it out.
Yeah. People were really, really happy about the idea of no more wars.
Mm-hmm. Particularly. Epstein.
Yeah. And the Epstein files for sure. Like that had been such a huge right-wing conversation about, you know, this powerful cabal of wealthy Wall Street people who have, you know, crazy mm-hmm. pedophile rings. And it turns out they, you know, Trump is hiding it, and Trump is trying to hide information about it, and Todd Blanche is helping him do it. So
just
yeah.
So gross. Oh my God. These people are so gross. I know that, you know, rapists and other forms of violent, I don't know, offenders, whatever, have been presidents in the past, right? We've had presidents that are not necessarily good people, but we didn't know about it. People didn't specifically vote for these, like knowing someone was a rapist. I mean, Trump was found guilty in a court and they still voted for him. It's just unbelievable to me. And then they have the audacity to come at us for like the Platners and the Swalwells. And it's like, we boot ours out. You mm-hmm. know, we kick them out. And they elect their rapists. Oh my God. It's so awful. Okay. Let's talk about this one too. Nebraska town hall descends into chaos as crowd boos GOP rep. I want to know all about this because I did not read it, but I love this stuff. This is what I live for.
Yeah. So I was really shocked this didn't get more play in the news, and maybe it will after today, but I guess it was yesterday, a day before. That Mike Flood, congressman of Nebraska, is home, like a bunch of other lawmakers, and they're doing town halls. And he faced off against a bunch of folks, and they were hacked off like everybody else is. But what was really stupid of him is that instead of trying to empathize and do the whole feel your pain thing.
Right.
And, you know, I agree with you. I want to do this better. And, you know, all of the things that you would think a lawmaker would say, instead of all of those things, his comment was, why do I work so hard to pay my taxes for somebody that can work and chooses not to work?
Oh my God.
And then there was like, I know, right? And everybody is just like, dude, read the room,
read the room.
And then there was a woman who was a CPA who spoke out and said, you're lying to these people here. Like, I deal with taxes. I know how this works. All of these things that you're saying that you've done to help people sunset in 2 years. Like, this doesn't last. The only thing that lasts are the tax cuts to the uber wealthy and to corporations. And he cut her off and basically was like, you know, you're not asking a question, so we're going to move on. And and then everybody started booing and they were like, let her speak. Yeah. So they were a rowdy crowd. Yeah. And I am just in constant awe of lawmakers who think that they can go into a room and be like that to mm-hmm. their own constituents. Like, even regardless of which side you're on, like you have to be able to empathize with the people in your district, because otherwise they're going to think you've abandoned them.
Yeah.
And yeah. It is beyond me. It's like, you guys, this is not rocket science. Like, just be a decent human being, right?
Yeah.
Rule number one, don't be an asshole.
They don't know how. They just don't know how. I mean, you know, this is an era of the Trumpism. The way, you know, I look at how we had evolved up until Trump, and obviously, we were not perfect. There was lots of room for improvement, but we went backward, and we went backward in so many ways. And I think that because of Donald Trump, I mean, you looked at the Republicans while Obama was president, and their behavior was so disgusting. It was so disgusting. And I think, you know, then we get Donald Trump and he gives everybody permission to be super disgusting in like anywhere, you know, I mean, anywhere you go now. And I think it's reading, and Republicans are behaving that way. And I feel like, in a way, I'm kind of glad that it's happening, because if they were more subtle, if he would have, you know, come out and done what you suggested or think that every politician should do, I feel your pain. But they are so filled with their own hubris, and I think that they're doing damage to themselves outside. You know, obviously they're damaging the country, but I think in the end they're pushing everybody to the brink where we're like, no more. I'm going to be, you know, very, what's the word? I feel like I wish I could just take some kind of drug that would knock me out until after, you know, like starting on, just I guess when people start voting, when all the polls close in the midterms, then I just want to take a pill, and go to sleep and wake up to find out we won. Cause I hate the fucking, the journey now is no, it's not a fun thing. It's terrifying to watch the numbers come in. Although I do say, and I will maintain, it's easier to cheat in a presidential election that for that one person, as opposed to going through the country. And obviously they're going to cheat. They're going to try to cheat all that stuff. And they might succeed in certain red states. But I think overall, I'm going to keep going back to Hungary. If we just show up in numbers too big to ignore, we can overcome whatever they're doing. And I don't think he's going to have the help of Elon Musk anymore cheating. So whatever Elon did, you know, offering all the money and, you know, whatever else was done by Elon, I don't know that he's going to be there to do it. I hope he's not. Anyway, I think it's promising. It's promising to hear these kind of stories. And it truly is what I live for, because regardless of who those people voted for in the past at that town hall, the fact that he had to face that feels really good. So, yay.
You know, good. And the sad thing is I think a lot of lawmakers see this and then decide we're not going to do it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And that is just like, God, come on, guys. Like, face your people.
Yeah.
At least have the guts to face your people.
Because they're not serving their people. They're serving themselves. That's that they don't want to face the people. And I think the people who are truly serving the people have no problem getting out in front of everybody. But, you know, unfortunately, they're like a fascist party now. So they're just going to behave that way. Any other like notable stories that you've been working on?
So, before we came on, I finished a story. I don't think it's up yet. Somebody at the State Department didn't know the countries in Africa. Oh my gosh. They had an international HIV/AIDS conference in Brazil, and there was a slide in the presentation, and it had all of these countries listed on the right and little, you know, lines going to where they were on the map, and they were all very, very wrong.
Oh my God, how embarrassing.
Like, really. And then I want to say there were like six countries and there were only five lines. So Cameroon, which was at the bottom, like they got to Cameroon and they were like, ah, screw it. I don't even know where Cameroon is. I'm not going to try.
Oh my God.
And I guess Reuters did an analysis of a bunch of different photos. I guess a bunch of people posted the photo, like took a photo and posted it on their social media. But Reuters looked at all of those and found an AI watermark on it. So it's, I mean, I think we all kind of knew, that's AI for you. Mm-hmm. But just having a State Department employee not spot check.
Exactly.
You know, or not notice. Mozambique is not in the Sahara. Like, oh my God. I mean, it's been
making
since
America
the seventh.
Making America great.
Right. It's been since the seventh grade, since I had to color all the maps and identify everything and memorize where everything was. But even I know that Mozambique isn't in the Sahara.
Oh my God.
It's pretty in. I mean, thank God they didn't have Egypt on there, because it's like, guys, at least you can get that one right. You know, like, at least Morocco, right? Like, there's the movie, the whole Casablanca movie. You should know where Morocco is.
Right, exactly. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's just insane. And like, when we first started talking, I don't even know if you said it while we've been recording, but like, today's crazy because everywhere you turn, it's madness and insanity. I mean, there was one, I don't know if you saw, there was not a GIF, but like a little video going around of a secret service guy who's behind Trump. I don't know if it's at Lindsey Graham's funeral, but he's.
Yes, it was. Yeah,
right. Okay. And Trump's falling asleep and everything, but this man's face, it appears that he's having to smell odors that are not good.
yeah it was one of those like, oh God, what is that old man smell?
Yeah. And I mean, Kathy Griffin straight up said, she's like, I don't think people talk about this enough, but Donald Trump has a smell, and she said he smells like shit and like makeup and hairspray. And now epistemic crisis doctor on Instagram tells us that he got some source of his. So I can't, you know, I can't verify this, but somebody said he smells like urine. Do I think that he smells like urine? Sure. You know, sure. I don't think he has control. So, you know, Noel Kassler talked about this on my podcast in 2020 about how on the set of The Apprentice, oh my God, and we have to talk about that woman. Because on the set of The Apprentice, I guess there was somebody assigned to cleaning up Trump. And what Noel said was that, and he had signed a non-disclosure agreement, and then he just broke it. And mm-hmm. and I don't know. I know he had said a lot of this stuff prior. This was at it was like September 2020. He was on my podcast, and he just said a lot of shit that I don't know that he said anywhere else. But he basically said that on the set of The Apprentice, that Trump would get upset and he would start screaming, and then he would crap his pants, and they'd have to take him off and clean him up. So I don't know if you've seen the reports of that woman, that blonde woman, who's there to clean his ass. And I think they call her like his diaper aide or something. Are you familiar with her?
Yeah. So this is the woman who in reports, I think it was in the Maggie Haberman, Jonathan Swan book where they said mm-hmm. she follows him around and always prints things off on paper.
Right.
And gives them to him to read because he can't read things on a screen.
Yeah.
And I have not heard her as, you know, a diaper changer. And I haven't heard any comments from people who have been close enough to smell him. I did have, you know, and 78 to 84 year old man in my life that I took care of for, mm-hmm. you know, until his mm-hmm. final days. And so I know what mm-hmm. the, what it can smell like after a while.
Right.
I know too, there was a story I'm trying to remember. I think it was after his, one of his physicals, one of his annual physicals that he's had four of in the last year and a half.
His annual physicals.
And somebody was who was a physician was talking about the medications that he was on and some of the side effects of one of them, and that it can cause, you know, bladder issues and so that, I mean, just being old and mm-hmm. and having a massive prostate, which I guess happens when you're old, mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't surprise me.
And his really poor diet, and I don't, you know, I mean, I don't know anything about his cleanliness, but, you know, or at least how often he showers. And look, I'm going to be, you know, providing I am old one day, and maybe I'm not going to smell so great. So I understand that people get old and their smell changes, but he's a fascist rapist who's shitting his pants, and fuck him. That, you know, I don't care if this sounds disrespectful. Because it's not pointed at the elderly. It's pointed at him. And he is just so gross. He's such a disgusting, gross person. And I feel like that guy, that Secret Service, I think he said it all with his face. How miserable it is to have to be around this guy. Now, I don't know if that woman is cleaning his ass, but maybe she is. And I saw, was it Christopher Webb? I don't know. It was somebody who was posting about her and how she was such a sycophant. You know, that like a Trump sycophant, that I guess she's happy to do that. I can't even imagine. But I mean, it would be hard enough to do with someone in your own family. But if it was somebody like Donald Trump, you're not even related to this guy. You know, you don't see any of his children offering to help. I don't think any of his children would ever do anything like that. I don't think they like him. So I don't know, man. And, you know, all I can say, I have to bring this up because it's me. And I just feel like as we watch this man, he's continually deteriorating in front of our eyes. Another thing the epistemic crisis doctor said, and, you know, he's on IG, he was talking about, now this was not necessarily his theory, but somebody else had written in or provided with, you know, there was a tweet or something like that about the fact that Trump has to wear, now I don't know if this is true, but that he has to wear a retainer because he's done so much cocaine and drugs that he has a hole in the roof of his mouth, and that he wears a retainer in order to keep like food and drink from getting up into his nasal passages. So I don't know if that's true, but if it is, and there is something in his mouth that he fucks around with. And this was talking about the fact that he doesn't have dentures. He has like, you know, full dental.
He has caps.
Work. Right.
Yeah.
So he, I don't know, maybe there is some, but it's like what it is we don't know. You know, I know that there are certain people out there who don't like speculation, but when it comes to his health, we don't have anything but speculation and what he looks like and what he's doing, you know, how he behaves is constant. You know, I mean, clearly he's sundowning. He sweats a lot. We know that he shits his pants. We know that he's most likely had a couple of strokes because, you know, I don't know if you noticed, and I think we're so used to the stroke face that when he was at Lindsey Graham's funeral and he was kind of out of, you know, he was asleep, you could see the one side of his mouth was starting to, you know, go to the side, which is the sign of a stroke. Like it just looked like it was like he had no muscle control on that side. And so all these things, you know, he probably has congestive heart failure. He probably has some issue with his kidneys. He was likely given that drug, which I don't remember the name of, and it starts with an I, but it's supposed to be for obesity, and it's not working. Maybe it's keeping him alive a little bit, but he's not losing weight, so he's not listening to advice from his doctors, and he's the president of the United States. So I feel like, you know, any bagging on him or any kind of I don't even know, speculation is absolutely merited because we're not getting the true story from anybody. We hear from his doctor some fucking bullshit weight and how he's the healthiest man that ever lived. No, I'm sorry. I like to look at him and go, he's dying. So he is. He's dying.
Well, I think the larger point of it for me is that he kind of built this thing from his attacks on Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't think people would be talking about it maybe as much if he didn't make such a big deal about it for 4 years with Joe Biden. And I mean, I get it. Like there were definitely some issues with Biden, mm-hmm. but like,
nothing
you know,
like this. Yeah.
But the guy broke his foot. And so his like hobbling right. around was because he broke his foot. He right. has always had a stutter. So sometimes when he would stutter, it's his stutter, not the yeah. fact that he is having a stroke. And so it's like they took these little bitty things that Biden has always had and right. tried to turn it into this big, oh, he's too old to lead. And now it's coming back at them. And you're like, guys, like you did this to yourself.
Yeah.
You yep. built this movement.
Yeah. And they deserve it. And American people deserve to know the truth about the health of their president. And we are never told the truth about anything. So, and then on top of it, the corporate news media, you know, the way they went after Biden compared to their ignoring all these obvious health issues of Trump is maddening. It's just absolutely maddening. And, you know, Jake, fuck you, Jake Tapper. I can't say that enough.
So, anyway. I remember with Lloyd Austin, remember when he had, he was going under for some kind of surgery and everybody yes. lost their minds.
Yes.
Because he didn't sign off on, you know, somebody being in charge. And it,
yeah.
I mean, stuff like that, where everybody then was just like, dude, little transparency here, little bit, just a little bit. And nope. So I think that's the should be the case for Republicans yeah. too. It's like, guys, speaking of yeah. Mitch McConnell,
yeah,
like just give us a little transparency, man.
Okay, then let me ask you about Mitch McConnell, because what is your personal opinion? I know you're a reporter, but what is your personal opinion on what Beshear is doing, Andy Beshear?
I actually am not, I don't care about the Beshear thing, because from the way that I would see this, if I were an anti-McConnell, you know, partisan hack, mm-hmm. is the fewer Republicans you have in the Senate,
right,
the closer the margins are and the less likely you are to pass anything from the Republican agenda. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I completely get there is a part of me that's like, no, people deserve to be represented and have their person in office. Mm-hmm. Andy Beshear can't do anything mm-hmm. other than talk. But this idea of when the Democrats are sort of fighting among themselves saying, no, you need to put somebody in there. It's like, why guys? Like you you really should look at the margins here, because if you don't want any of the Republican agenda to get passed, you want Mitch McConnell to stay in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way I look at it is, I don't necessarily think they should put someone else in there, but I'm looking at Beshear, and I think he wants to run in 2028. And I think that he's going to be in a huge pool of people. And I think the ones that are going to rise to the top are the ones that are forcefully, how could I say this? Not just speaking truth to power, but like going as extra as you can. Now, I don't think he should put anyone in, but maybe he could go to the hospital. Maybe he could do some political stuff. Ask, what would Mitch McConnell do?
Right.
How would he behave? And start taking on some of those tactics, not breaking the law or breaking rules per se, but if they're going to break the rules, then we're going to kind of give it back to them. And the strongly worded letter, I'm with you on the fact that, hey, if McConnell can't vote, that helps the Democrats. But when you look at this guy who wants to be a president and wants to be taken seriously as president, you need to show some moxie. And I think he needs a little, and I'm not really bashing him. I think he's a decent guy. I just think in this fight, you know, we have to say, what are Republicans doing and what would they do? And while we're not going to do exactly what they would do, let's take from their playbook a little bit more. Not breaking the law, but, you know, not playing nice and going, well, we just can't do anything. They can always figure out shit to do. Always. They can delay. They can do all these things. And Democrats, a lot of the time, throw their hands in the air because they're playing by the rules. Mm-hmm. And then they appear weak to voters. So I think that, you know, it's different than when, you know, before Donald Trump, before the Tea Party, when we had a little bit more, I mean, Republicans were always Republicans, but they were able to, you know, get deals done, reach across the table, blah, 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 blah. Right now, we're in a completely different situation, although there are some Republicans that are willing to work with Democrats. But overall, we've got fascist people in our government, and we can't fuck around with them. And that's my personal feeling on the Beshear thing.
Yeah, there's a policy perspective and there's a politics perspective.
Like, yes,
the policy
exactly.
is
right.
Beshear has no power. He can't do anything.
Yes.
He's kind of screwed. But you're right. Like, if he wants to run for president, he has to figure out a way to stand out. And it doesn't take, he doesn't even have to like go into the hospital and demand to see Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
He could very easily just film a video of himself outside the hospital and say,
right.
I tried to get in.
Yeah.
I tried to confirm this and they wouldn't let me in. Like,
right.
it is a PR stunt.
Right.
To
there
do.
You go.
Crazy
exactly.
stuff like that,
yeah.
knowing that it's never going to work, but at the very least, you could do a video on it, and that would set him apart and get a
yes.
ton of views and get him some cable news hits and yada yada.
Yeah,
probably.
He needs like, okay, so like again, what would John Ossoff do? Because I'm looking at John Ossoff right now, and I think, you know, providing, and he's looking good in the race, providing he wins his seat. I think that, you know, again, there's going to be a big pool, but I think he's going to be one of the real contenders. I don't know who we're going to see. I think we're going to see a bunch of people. I don't know, you know, I mean, like I look at AOC, I look at Kamala Harris, I look at, I don't know if Chris Van Hollen's going to run. I always liked Chris Van Hollen. Who else? Oh, Pritzker. We're going to see, and more than likely Newsom. But I don't think Newsom's going to be a front runner. But what are your thoughts on Ossoff? Like, what do you think of him? Not necessarily, I mean, I don't, you know, you can add if you would like to see him as the nominee, but just in a general sense, as a reporter, what's your take on him?
So I think he's doing all of the right things for PR stuff. Like, he's saying the things that get him noticed, and he's making sure to film it and push it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got a really good team of people behind him, and he's doing all the right media stuff that he should be doing. He's probably just looking at Collins and how much Collins has completely screwed up the race in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And the polling in that race right now, like, there's no chance for him. And so Ossoff, I mean, he can't take his foot off the gas, but he you know, he's still got to run a legitimate campaign,
right?
But he can kind of use the Senate campaign to propel himself more nationally. And I always wonder when folks do that, when you like for those Senate races, when senators are doing their reelect and they're trying to look more presidential, I wonder if it's just a way to get more money into their Senate race, or if it is, I really do want to run for president. And I think that I think Democrats are going to be in a position in 28 where folks are going to be scared to have, you know, a person of color, a gay man, like, you know, a lot of those diverse candidates, because we keep losing those races. And so I think when you look at somebody like Ossoff, who can speak to issues like diversity, because he was mentored by John Lewis. I think there is a piece of him that connects with people that other white candidates can't necessarily achieve. And I think he has that sort of Southern charm thing that makes him look good on TV.
Well, and he's also handsome.
TV.
Yeah.
Right.
He's a handsome guy, which doesn't hurt.
He has kind of that all shucks Southern boy thing that I think works in commercials and on video. That is something that you don't see somebody like Mark Kelly and Pritzker have. And Newsom, bless his heart, is just like the poor little rich boy, you know, like you're just like, Gavin, you're never,
no, it's not gonna
buddy, happen. Buddy, I get it. I get it. And you are very pretty, but pretty little
and
rich
boy. I
don't
boy. Even think he's that pretty. You know, I mean, I get it. I get that he's a handsome man in a general sense, but like, he just doesn't do it for me.
He looks he used to, like when he was younger and he had the floppy hair.
Right.
And I lived in San Francisco and he was around all the time. I was just like, yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so do I. Well, yeah. And I mean, I'm looking at Ossoff and I feel like I don't want to specifically compare him to Obama, but I think the comparison is that he's such a great orator. He is, I don't know. He has this way of speaking that he it's almost like he's doing a sermon, you know. It's like he's so fired up and he's filled with all the feelings. He gives you all the feels, and I, you know, I know that it shouldn't matter, but good looking people do better. And so I think that, you know, he's going to have that kind of appeal. He is Jewish, which I know, unfortunately right now we're seeing upticks in, you know, anti-Semitism, just because we're seeing upticks in anybody who's not, you know, the Christian white male. So I don't think it's going to hurt him, though. I don't think that's necessarily going to get in the way. I know there will be disgusting, you know, if he were the nominee, we would see a lot of really disgusting things coming from people who don't like him based on the fact that he's Jewish. But I don't think that's going to be the biggest problem. And, you know, I do want to say, I know that I have pissed off some women who have been on my show before, and then maybe just other women in general, because I don't think that this is the year we should run a woman. And it's not because I think America isn't ready for a woman. America showed us we were ready for a woman with Hillary Clinton. But what we learn is the system is too easy to rig if the race is too close. And that wasn't even that close. That was like 3 million. And my fear is if we were to get, you know, I don't know who they're going to put up. I think they're the other side right now. I would guess it's either going to be, you know, maybe JD's going to run. I don't know if he's going to make it. I think it would be Rubio or perhaps Tucker Carlson. And if it were Tucker Carlson, I have to say, he would scare me, you know, and I don't, and the reason he would scare me is because I think Republicans, they're very used to him. They've seen him on Fox News. They know who he is. And I don't know that he can do it. I don't know that he can convince him. I don't think Rubio's very exciting, but I just feel like, you know, I don't want to trust our system once again. What I want is this time in 2028, I want us to win and then fix the as much as you can before the next election. the next general election. So, and I, you know, I don't know what that's going to look like. If it's going to look like, oh God, I can't remember the interstate. What if, I think we talked about it one of the times you were on the show, where you don't necessarily need, it doesn't come down to, and I can't explain this well, but it's something about the popular vote, the national compact. Do you know what I'm talking about? The national vote thing?
Oh,
interstate compact or something like that. Yeah. Where it's basically about, it's not about the electoral college votes as much. Now it's just about the popular vote. And if we can get enough, we only need like 40 some more electoral votes in order to just have it so that now it's the popular vote. That I would feel more comfortable. If we had a popular vote, then put up the woman, put up the black person. Obviously Obama showed that a black man can win, but could a black man win now? I don't know. And I hate that our system is rigged toward the white man, but right now it is. And so I feel like, you know, let's not mess around. I know, boy, a lot of people are going to hate me for saying that.
Westmore is one throw in there.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, oh my God, what about Westmore? Because yeah, I know. And he scares Republicans.
He really does.
He might be able to win because he's fucking great.
And he's handsome.
Yes, he's also handsome.
And he's a girl dad.
Yeah, he's young. He's a great. I live in Maryland. He's a great governor. We all love him. So yeah, he's also someone to watch. And
his wife is super hot. I mean, I know that doesn't matter to a lot of people.
But it does. It makes people.
But when you think about all of the qualities that you need for a candidate, it really does come down to what do they look like and the George W. Bush. Do you want to have a beer with them?
Yeah.
Which and people
Bob crazy.
I know it's for people who are policy nerds and who, you know, want to see white papers.
Yeah.
It is frustrating, but you know, this is sadly
the
world
we're in.
Have a
beer with Obama.
Right. I mean, that would be the strangest conversation.
Oh my God. It would be so cool.
And I mean, because I tend to like the girls more. And so the whole time I would just be like, your wife is hot.
Everybody loves your wife.
Yeah. What happened there? Like, why'd you end up being the nominee whenever everybody likes her a lot more?
Well, we'll see what happens. And I mean, I certainly don't want to piss everybody off, but, and if anyone is pissed off at me, guess what? I have absolutely no say in this. So, I'm just throwing my two cents out there, and whatever will be, and whoever the nominee is, they have my vote, including Gavin Newsom, who I don't really like very much, but I'm grateful for his Trump trolling, which I think is not as exciting anymore. Last year he was really on a roll with it, but I think it's just coming to the point where everything is just so crazy and fucked up that it's not as exciting because it's just not. We're just so used to it. But I want to talk about two things before we go. One thing I do want to bring up specifically is this race with Tallarico, because where is it? Let me get the information. So the Texas Tribune, this was July 28th. Tallarico was up 45 to 40. And so Paxton's at 40%. But here's what's notable. Tallarico leads among non-college voters by 45 to 36, and among independents, 43 to 23. So this is really huge. First of all, it's Texas. And I know that we don't know, right? We'll see what happens in Texas. But this is a BFD because independents decide elections. And right now we've got some fucking issues in our own party. It's not even the party, it's the people, the voters. And so there's all the Democratic voters are getting their panties in a bunch about all the other Democratic voters. And I just can't fucking deal with it. So I'm hoping that, I hope by the time 28 rolls around, we get our shit together. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But what I do know is right now, despite the infighting in the Democratic Party, the voters particularly, I'm not talking about the party, it's independents who are going to decide this. And I think that, and it's going to be right-leaning independents who are going to really help decide this. So I think that it's very telling that in Texas, Tallarico is getting fucking 71, or no, did I say 71? I keep saying 71, 43 to 23. So what do you think about this race? What do you think about the way Tallarico is running? And, you know, just personally, what do you think his chances are? I think we've talked about this before. I just want to see if something's changed.
Yeah, so forever I'm going to be the person that's like, yeah, yeah, tell me again about how Democrats are going to win Texas. What I would say that I'm watching right now is seeing these polls, these new polls for Texas, and how much money Republicans are willing to dump into this race. Because so far, they've dumped nothing in. They have given the National Party has done nothing to help Paxton.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's because Republican senators are mad and they're about the Cornyn stuff and they want to, you know, give money to people like Collins or whatever else from their PACs. But you're not seeing a lot of the big guns come in and help Paxton. And I the other piece of it that I think is a factor here is the primaries in Texas, you really saw an anti-incumbent kind of thing, like an anti-old white guy, but also an anti-incumbent sentiment where it didn't matter if you were, you know, a 10-term Democrat who was beloved in your district, a lot of those folks lost. And they lost to young, vibrant, you know, people of color and women and newcomers. And so I wonder how much of that could factor in, because even though Paxton is not the incumbent in the Senate race, he's an incumbent who's been in public, in statewide public office. And so I think people know him enough, and he's just had the worst press for like the last 5 years. So it's like, if you, in very few cases, can you say that all press is good press? Because none of his press has been good press. Even like the dude went to on a European vacation in the middle of the campaign with his ex-mistress. So it's like, oh, bro. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I think even when it comes down to Ted Cruz trying to raise money, we all know that Ted Cruz is the one Ted Cruz has been waiting for. So he doesn't like to play. He doesn't like to play in the sandbox with anybody. So I don't know if he's going to fork over some cash and start trying to raise money for him. But Tallarico's got a bucket of money. And in Texas, that's going to matter.
Yeah. You know, I'm totally with you as far as I'll believe it when I see it, because I am right there. But I think there's a difference now. And I'm not making a prediction. I'm just noting that, you know, like, for instance, Beto came close. But we were not in – the times were different. People were – and okay, I know this is Texas. But there's definitely blue parts of Texas, and there's definitely parts of, like you said, there's part of the MAGA cult that's breaking away. There's a lot of Republicans that maybe just decide to sit it out. They're not going to vote for Tallarico, but they just might sit it out. These were not really in play. This kind of thinking was not in play when Beto was running. And we're living in a different country now. We're living in a kind of country. Everything has changed. People are worried about gas prices. And then on top of it, you have Tallarico, who is very much in, like, I think he's a lot like Jimmy Carter in the way that he invokes his religion in a positive way, not in a weaponizing way. And I think that really does speak to people who are serious, not the weaponizers, because there's a lot of weaponizers. But I think the people who are truly serious about their faith, when they hear him, I think they trust him. And I think they feel like, you know what, he now, I can't say how any of these people are going to vote. I don't know. But I just think there is like a different feel to what's happening. So I do think there's a chance he could pull this off. But as you say, with your cynical, of course, it's Texas. So we're right. going to be cynical. But I think we have a shot there because we've been able to, you know, in the last, at least since Obama left office, you know, we've been seeing some changes in some of these states, like North Carolina.
Demographically.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I think that, you know, I still maintain that Donald Trump is basically a manifestation of so much, I think on both sides, of feeling like things needed to change, right? You've got the MAGA people who had their ridiculous agenda about what needed to change. But you had a lot of liberals and independents who thought, you know, whether it's Citizens United or the Electoral College or whatever, you know, whatever it is, corporations not paying any taxes, lots of people were pissed off and upset. And so there was this general kind of energy in the air and feeling like we got to improve things. And I think out of that came this big giant monster who is stomping all over the Constitution and stomping all over the country and breaking it all down. And what it does is it gives us an opportunity then to rebuild. So I think we're and then of course we have to rebuild. We can't keep repeating the same old stupid mistakes. So we have to rebuild with, and maybe we will. Ruth Bader Ginsburg always talks about that pendulum. So it's like, you know, I think right now there is an energy and a climate that is different than anything we've ever experienced before, including Trump's first presidency. So that's where I have hope, and I'm not making a prediction because I made a prediction in 2024 and it didn't happen. So although it should have happened, but it just didn't happen. So I don't know, but I feel that there's a real possibility. I think we have a real possibility, and especially with the midterms in a general sense, because I'm going to keep saying this. In 2018, well, first in 2014, we had the lowest voter turnout in a midterm in 80 years. And then in 2018, we had general election turnout because it was Donald Trump. And now this time around, there's no guardrails. So many people are upset. And then we saw what happened in Hungary. I don't know how many people are going to remember that, but still, we saw what happened in Hungary. And I think that this could possibly be the start of the turnaround. I'd love that. You know, I mean, we're still going to have to deal with shit, but it's just hopefully it will turn.
The one of the polling numbers from the CNN poll that came out this week, which has some really weird questions that it asked, like kind of buried. Mm-hmm. I did one of those reports talking about some very bizarre questions that they asked, particularly about Trump's health and, you know, stuff like that. But one of the differences, I think, between Trump approval ratings and the other question that I would compare to it is the right track, wrong track numbers. So you ask people, is the country on the right track or the wrong track? And those are not necessarily the same questions as approve, disapprove of Trump,
right.
But it's in that same kind of line. Mm-hmm. And it's enough that if you're not mentioning Donald Trump, the Trump supporters will answer more honestly about right track, wrong track.
Hmm.
And sure enough, 70% say total say wrong track.
Yeah.
58% of those are Republican.
Wow.
So the Republican.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So the asking right track, wrong track, 58% of Republicans say wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's kind of one of those hit or miss, because I remember when Biden was in office and we had a Republican Congress, I kept thinking, well, yeah, of course a lot of people are going to say wrong track because mm-hmm. you have Republican members of Congress who are doing crazy things. So, you know, I get nuanced about those kinds of things and I second guess it. And then my friends are always yelling at me being like, no, just think simple. Mm-hmm. Think like a voter.
Right.
And to your comment too, like everybody has to remember that decisions are made by those who show up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously there's going to be the threat of ICE. There's going to be whatever they can get away with. But I think that people are so angry, and the fact that these Republicans aren't showing up to town halls, that's going to piss them off even more, because at least at a town hall, they feel they get to say what they feel and vent. And if they don't even have that opportunity to do it. I think that, you know, with the explosive diarrhea, they, you know, normally this is tracked within like a week, right? But he's killed everybody off, all the jobs where they can track and keep us safe and healthy. God forbid there's another fucking pandemic. It's like, please, please, please just get us through these years. But people are just, I think, really fed up. They're fed up with the way, and then the gas prices, and I don't want the gas prices to come down. And I mean, I do for the families, but I mean, as far as politically speaking, I don't want them to come down, because people tend to not understand gas prices and just blame the president. And in this case, it is his fault, but still, it's like, I don't want people getting too comfortable before the election. I want them all uncomfortable, because that's when we're going to succeed. And I think they are uncomfortable, but I don't know what is wrong. You know, on Ted Lasso, there's this advice, be a goldfish, because goldfish forget like after 3 seconds or whatever it is. And boy, that does describe a lot of voters. they completely forget how awful things were, and they go, let's try it again. So I don't know. I think maybe we're getting ourselves into a position this time around where maybe our memory will last a little bit longer. I certainly hope so. And I certainly hope that by the time 28 rolls around, nobody's fooled. If Tucker Carlson is the, oh my God, if Tucker Carlson is the nominee, I'm going to vomit. But I guess we have to wait and see. I would hope that Rubio would be the nominee, because he's probably the most boring. You know, I think maybe J.D. Vance would suck pretty bad, but I don't know. Who's going to get excited about Marco Rubio? You know?
No one. But think of the sofa jokes if it was Vance. Like,
I know, endless memes.
I hate to be that person who thinks about candidates with respect to comedy, you know, where it's just like, oh, yeah. Because that was one of the reasons I feel like the late night guys were like, oh, we want Trump, because this is just bottomless. Yeah,
right.
Jokes for us. So
I know the right will march in lockstep like they do all the time if Rubio is their guy, but he's going to be so uninteresting. And if we can get a really charismatic person in there, and, you know, go up against Rubio, yes, please. Even though I'm going to hate election night. You know, I always hate election night.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. I said we were going to talk about two things, and I'm not really going to bring anything else up because we're running out of time and it wasn't that important anyway. So maybe we can cover it the next time we're on. But as usual, I always enjoy your perspective. I love talking to a reporter, and you're so smart and you're so fun. So thank you for being on the show. And I always want you to tell everybody where to find you if they don't already know.
Yes. So, I mean, really, you can just Google me, Sarah Burris, and you'll find all of my stuff. It pops up at the top. But that's my name on Instagram and the Facebook. And I'm still on Twitter, because I will not cede it. I will not cede it to the white supremacists. But Blue Sky, I love Blue Sky, because it's fun. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Cool. All right. Well, thank you. And we'll chat again.
Thank you. You're amazing.
I'm Brian Karam, and I've spent decades covering politics. Now I'm taking you behind the scenes, one interview at a time.
Join us as each week Brian confronts the issues that matter, posing the questions you wish you could ask. No filter, no agenda, just the truth.
We're not here for sound bites. We're here for substance. Join me, Brian Karam, every week as we cut through the noise and get straight to it. This is Just Ask the Question, where curiosity will lead us to the facts.
Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, when you want answers, all you have to do is just ask the question.
Tired of sugar-coated news and corporate spin? Check out The Nicole Sandler Show, speaking truth to power with the irreverence it deserves. Smart, fearless, and just the right amount of snark. Nicole breaks down the headlines, exposes the hypocrisy, and talks with the people working for real change. Weekdays at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on Progressive Voices, NicoleSandler.com, Substack, YouTube,
or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't just get the news, get the truth.